Good morning, everyone. It's Lady Curious. How has everyone been? I hope you have been safe and well. I will say that I will not regret anything that I say today. Some things need to be said. Find the truth and no apologies. I do have merch out, new merch on bonfire.com. I will link everything down below so you can go check it out. It's brand new dials, so I hope you like them. Go check it out. I also have them on spreadshirt.com under Curious Raven. You will also find them there. Remember, everything in this video is for educational and documentary purposes only. I'm here to tell the truth and nothing but the truth to the best of my ability. I have researched and researched. This case is not as detailed as my Jason Fox case. I've tried to find videos of Sydney and I could not find any. I even reached out to the family and I haven't heard anything back. But I understand some people just want to be left alone. In this case, is so huge in the YouTube true crime community that they probably have been pestered so much and they've probably seen so many videos. And that's the best I can do. I want to be respectful. So remember, be respectful in the comments. The family members of these loved ones, they can stumble across this video and see what you write. Wish them love and support and say nice things to each other. I always love reading my comments and I try to get back to you as soon as possible. So tell me what you think about this case. I'm pretty sure you heard about it. This was requested by a subscriber. Usually I do cases that are not in the media that much, but like I said, this was a special request. I'm gonna get angry in this video. The two monsters that did this to her, they both should have got the death penalty. This girl was preyed upon, had no idea what was going to happen to her. She was just completely blindsided. I think everyone was. Tinder and online dating sites like POF, Craigslist, Grindr. I'm pretty sure there's many, many more, but I'm a married woman and I don't keep up with that stuff anymore. They're dangerous. Completely and utterly dangerous. You have no idea who is on the other side of the keyboard. Even if you meet them in person, I'm not gonna lie. In my late 20s, before I got married, and I went through that phase where I was on POF and I had my own apartment and I was going on dates and sometimes inviting people over, and just, it could have ended badly like this did. And Sydney, she took all the precautions that you can. She took every single one of them. Remember, be nice in the comments, show love and support, find the truth, no apologies. Let's get into this video. Online dating is becoming the norm for every single day use for singles that are trying to find love and even sexual encounter. Meeting strangers online, a dark outlier of danger and chancing becoming prey for sadistic monsters. That's the only mistake Sydney Loof made, was meeting someone offline. She lost her life just trying to find love. That is the most unfair and devastating thing I've ever heard. Sydney went on a date, a Tinder date, met this beautiful girl. Did I forget to mention that Sydney did not have the taste for men? She was a beautiful young woman that loved the beautiful ladies. And there is nothing wrong with that. You love who you love. Let people live their lives how they want to live them. Sydney Irene Loof was born on August 21st, 1993, in Broken Bow, Nebraska. Raised in Arcadia by her parents George and Susie Loof, Sydney and her family moved to Neely around 2000. Growing up, she loved sledding and bike riding. Her older brother said she wanted to hang with the boys of the family and wanted to do everything he wanted to do. She was very close with her siblings. She was known for her skilled fishing, and her family said she could almost outfish all of them. Sydney was very athletic. She played basketball and golf while she was in school, but then unfortunately she developed scoliosis as a teenager, and that hindered her from playing many sports. After graduating Neely Oakdale High School in 2011, she worked at her local Menards hardware store. It's kind of like a Home Depot, if you want to say, or an Ace Hardware, if you're not from the North, because I've never been in a Menards myself. She lived by herself and had a cat named Mimsy that she absolutely adored. Susie, her mother, recounted her daughter suffering from anxiety and major depression. Merely days before her disappearance, Sydney discussed that her depression and mental health was worsening, and her family said that they would help her out, and if she needed them to go with her to the doctor, they would. And they did. Sydney was on antidepressants trying to get some help. It was also said Sydney hated cleaning, and you know, when you're depressed, it's hard to clean. I struggle with it every day. So her friends and family would come over and help her clean. She just hated it. Like me, I hate doing dishes. Her first date, you know, she would text her friends and say, "Oh my gosh, I met this beautiful girl and she's really cool." And you could tell she was super excited about this girl she met on Tinder. And she just had a glow around her. The next day, she was going to meet the woman again. And her friend said that she did a Snapchat. Sydney was huge about Snapchat. And she sent her a snap smiling and saying, "Ready for my date?" And her friends just was happy that she was out dating. She really had some bad experiences with online dating. Like, it was stated that she would go and meet up with, like, a female and get to know them. And then all of a sudden, the female was like, "Oh, hey, you know, I do have a boyfriend. Maybe a three-way." And Sydney was sick of it. She's like, "I just want one person. I don't want anyone else." And a lot of times, these females had boyfriends. And she's like, "I'm not into the D." She even stated, as she was going on a date with this woman, "Oh man, I hope she doesn't have a boyfriend. I didn't even ask her that," because she was paranoid. Because she was worried that she would get on this date with this girl, that all of a sudden, a guy would just come out of nowhere. And she'd be like, "Oh hey, yeah, I got a boyfriend, you know." And she even texted this woman, "It is just going to be us, right? Us two on this date? That's it?" And she texted back and said, "Yes, just us two." Sydney had an older brother and a little younger sister. You can tell by the pictures that I will post that she was very close to her younger sister. They were like best friends. Her mom and dad loved her so much. This is what happened to Sydney. She met a woman on Tinder in 2017 named Audrey. But what Sydney did not know that Audrey was not this woman's real name. It was an alias. Her real name was Bailey Boswell. November 14th, 2017, she met Bailey on the Tinder app and she went on a first date. They rode around town and smoked some weed and just hung out, just them two. And Sydney seemed like she really thought Bailey was cool and she liked her vibe and she said she was gorgeous and she was really excited to see what went into the future with this woman. Sydney asked Bailey twice if they will be the only people at the date, to which Bailey responded, yes. She affirmed it. Sydney even texted a friend, "I hope she doesn't have a boyfriend. I didn't ask." Sydney asked this because of the past issues I told you earlier. The first date went well because one of Sydney's friends recounted her telling them she had just met an amazing down-to-earth girl. On November 15th, 2017, Sydney left work for a second Tinder date. The date was held in the basement apartment of Bailey. Before heading to her date, Sydney posted a Snapchat image captioned, "Ready for my date." Cell tower data showed and Sydney's phone last pinged in Wilbur before the phone shut off at 8:32 p.m. that night. Bailey recounted that they just smoked some weed and that ended up actually gifting some pot to Sydney before she took Sydney to one of Sydney's friend's house because Sydney did not drive to the date. Bailey came and picked her up and they drove back to Bailey's together. Unfortunately, something was terribly wrong because the next day, the 16th, no one had heard from Sydney. She didn't show up to work, and that was not normal at all. Sydney was a hard worker, very dedicated, didn't matter what job it was. And even her coworker, her boss, called her mom and said, "Hey, I can't get a hold of Sydney. I don't know what's going on. She didn't show up for her shift." So that day, her mom drove out to Sydney's apartment and she knew something was terribly wrong because Mimsy was left at the apartment by themselves, unfed. And they said Sydney loved her cat. She would never abandon her cat like that. And they seen her SUV that was parked in the driveway, but no signs of Sydney at all. Nothing seemed strange at the house. Nothing was awry. Nothing seemed off. And they kept trying to contact her and they couldn't get a hold of her. Her mother then filed a missing persons report on Sydney. It would not be until a couple weeks later, close to 3 weeks, on December 4th, that they located Sydney's body 60 miles from Bailey's apartment, and all of her close friends and family's nightmares were becoming a reality. This turned from a missing persons case into a murder-homicide case from here on. Bailey Marie Boswell was raised in Leon, Iowa. She was an infant when her biological father was murdered. She excelled at school athletics, topping the list of the fastest runners on her relay team and scoring dozens of points in basketball games. She was offered a scholarship to play college basketball. However, she turned to substance abuse after her graduation. Bailey was being cited $400 for possession of recreational drug paraphernalia. Bailey was a mom. She had one daughter, and she had this daughter when she was married to Freddie Pennell. Bailey's mother, Priscilla, recounted that Pennell and Bailey's relationship was physically, emotionally, and sexually abusive. Pennell had a drug addiction that led authorities to revoke the parents' custody of their school-aged daughter. According to Priscilla, Pennell also beat up a pregnant Bailey before kicking her face. Priscilla went on to discuss Bailey's move to Princeton, Iowa, and her unsuccessful plan to rebuild her life. The prosecutor claimed that Bailey sought out Aubrey Trail on the now defunct sex marketplace Backpage, alleging that she was looking for a sugar daddy. Bailey is a much younger than Aubrey and ended up in a relationship with him after moving to Princeton, Iowa for a fresh start. Bailey did not have custody of her daughter anymore. Now, Aubrey Clifton Trail endured a difficult childhood. At the age of 2, he was abused by his parents before his grandfather took care of him. Only time separated Aubrey from returning to his parents' household, where he was again abused by his stepfather. He grew up in poverty, moving steadily from one foster home and juvenile facility to another, before landing in prison as a teenager for armed robbery. These two people, Bailey and Aubrey, are the monsters of this story today. This is really the only little tidbit that I found of them, but I wasn't going to search because I don't like to make my videos be about the suspects, the criminals, the monsters, the pieces of shit that do bad things to hurt other people. I want to make light and remember the victims. I want to give voice to the victims. People say that in studies, that if you are brought up into this type of childhood or have a criminal past, it just seems like you don't turn out to be a great adult in the future. That's my opinion, but you know, hey, I'm not giving them any excuses. Zero. So at this point, Sydney's missing, okay? She was missing for like 3 weeks. They could not find her whatsoever. But the family just did everything they could. They were on TV trying to get the word out. They were on social media. They were putting up flyers. They were putting up ribbons. The community came in. They were doing huge searches for Sydney. This was a small community. So this rocked this town so bad. Like terror of who and where did she go? I will say the police did an excellent job. They did everything they could to find Sydney. A lot of times you see in a lot of these cases where the police just do not do an adequate investigation. They nailed these fuckers to the wall. I'm happy that Sydney got some type of justice. There are lots of twists and turns in this story. I will be talking about sexual abuse, sexual violence, some crazy sex cults, and just buckle up. It took me for a loop. I'm like, what? I didn't know all this stuff about this case. The investigation started with a search for Sydney after authorities failed to find Sydney during a welfare check. Because, you know, her mother was like, my daughter's missing and I cannot find her. So they did that initial check. Personal items she may need, however, remained in her residence. This included her purse and glasses and her car and her cat, you know, like her whole life. To me, the real MVP of this story is one of Sydney's coworkers slash friends. Her name was Brooklyn McChrystal. She remembers Sydney showing her the picture of Bailey and told her her name, you know, was Audrey. That was a little alias Bailey was using. She got on Tinder, did not even tell anyone she was doing this, put her own profile up, swiped and swiped and swiped and swiped hours and hours, days and days, until she found Bailey. And when she, you know, swiped or whatever, they were a match, and she actually started kind of talking to Bailey, you know, and Bailey gave her her phone number. Ha ha ha. So, Brooklyn went to the police with all this information. That is amazing. Like, she did her own undercover investigation to help find her friend. The Saline County Police Department made two visits to the basement apartment rented by Bailey and Aubrey, because once she gave this information to police, they found out the real identity of Audrey, and it was Bailey Boswell. Then they found where Bailey Boswell lived. And at that time, she only had been living at that apartment for not even 6 months. The first was a welfare check, since the final ping from Sydney's phone came from the address. Additionally, it was strange for Bailey and Aubrey to have an air conditioner on in a cold month of November. The landlord felt this was weird. When the police got there and started poking around, the landlord's like, look, it's odd. They've been gone for a week or so or whatever, and their air conditioner has been on full blast. And it's November in the north. It's very cold. So why would they do that? Well, we all know why they did that. They wanted to air out any type of smells. And the landlord told them it smelled like bleach so bad that people in her home were throwing up because the bleach smell was so bad and they had a reaction to it. That blows my mind. She just thought they were cleaning, I guess. I don't know. They knocked Bailey and Aubrey's door, but no answer. Using the landlord's key, the police entered the apartment, but the only thing that caught their attention was the pungent smell of bleach, like the landlord said. The next day, police came ready with a search warrant, but again, nothing was out of the ordinary, and the basement looked exactly the same as the day before. Bailey and Aubrey became persons of interest on November 28, 2017. When they did a search, more than one search in the basement, they started finding things that kind of made them go, a dog leash, when the couple didn't own a dog, duct tape, a sauna suit with a crotch cut out, zip ties, a hatchet, a plastic drop cloth smeared with blood, and a book on anatomy. They thought that was so weird. Bailey and Aubrey weren't nowhere to be found. Well, this was the last place Sydney was, and now these people are just ran off, and we have no idea where they are. Maybe they're trying to run. So the police were asking everybody and their mama, I meant literally their parents, where they were. And you know, this got back to them. So what this disgusting couple did. And when this happened in real time, y'all, I remember seeing this video on Facebook. And I was like, God, these people are fucking weird. Like, the couple responded to this declaration by making a Facebook live stream, defending themselves and maintaining their innocence. Bailey claimed that the dates involved her and Sydney driving the car around and smoking weed, and that following the second date, Bailey drove Sydney to a friend's home. And what was Bailey's last sighting of Sydney? Aubrey can be heard praying for Sydney to be found safe soon. I hope you can hear just my sarcasm. On November 30th, Bailey and Aubrey, and in this video, they just kept saying, oh, we hope her family finds her. We are so sorry for the family. We have no idea. And like a little allegations, you know, because the media runs with everything. And so does everyone else. When shit like this goes down, people are going to assume, you know, and go, hey, people are going to ask questions. And I'm guessing little Trill did not like those questions. And he was like, well, I'm no murderer. I know I'm a criminal. I've stolen. I've robbed. I've done this and this and this. This is what he proclaimed in this video, y'all. And I'm just sitting here like, what the fuck? And after I know what I know, and I watch that video back, I'm like, you motherfucker. That's what I wanted to say. I wanted to just reach out and just knock his teeth out. Eventually, on November 30th, Bailey and Aubrey were arrested at a motel in Branson, Missouri. But they're arrested on different charges. For fraud, they possessed maps, sleeping bags, and hiking shoes that appeared to have been part of their plan to escape to Mexico. So they were out here, like, doing their little fraud, trying to make some money before they ran. They stole some coins from someone, paint, just a lot of different stuff. Unfortunately, in December 4th and 5th, the FBI and local police departments eventually found Sydney's severed remains. That means they cut her up. They chopped her up. Y'all, this lovely, lovely, beautiful, blue-eyed, gorgeous, happy woman that couldn't hurt a fly. They just chopped her up like she was nothing. The devil will come for y'all. Jesus will send you to the depths of hell to burn in a great lake of flames. The police found body parts, sex toys, apparel, and other items were found wrapped inside many 30-gallon trash bags alongside a gravel road approximately 1 hour west of Wilbur. I want to give y'all a warning. This is very graphic, and if you don't want to hear about things that they didn't find of Sydney's body, then just skip 5 seconds. They never found Sydney's upper arm. They never found her heart, her esophagus, tongue, and most of her left lung, and almost all her internal organs. To me, my theory is that they could have sold some of this on the black market. I mean, they seem like a couple that knew how to sell things. And I don't know if they've took a gander into that or not, the police, but that's weird. Those certain things that were missing is weird. Okay, now that was the bad, real bad part of it. Antidepressants and small amounts of alcohol in Sydney's system. 3 months later, Sydney's slit bra and shirt seen in her last Snapchat image were discovered. Bailey had driven around 200 miles on various dirt roads in rural Clay County, Nebraska, found by cell phone pings and records. An autopsy would reveal that Sydney's cause of death was suffocation and that she had bruising that indicated she had fought back with her attacker. Sydney fought for her life, y'all. And when you see the video of Aubrey, you can understand why she didn't have a chance. This man was 200 plus pounds to her 100 pound self. And then also Bailey as well. She was there. Aubrey is saying Bailey had nothing to do with the death of Sydney. These two monsters, their stories change like their underwear. Aubrey made several, sometimes contradicting, confessions. Initially confessed from jail that he solely killed Sydney, referencing the law of retaliation. Aubrey proclaimed his wish to be executed for Sydney's killing. In a subsequent confession, he alleged that Sydney died following a third date with Bailey on November 16th. Now that's just fucking bullshit. Let me sip my coffee. His third confession, he claimed that the trio was to participate in a sexual fantasy where he would be with two women and he would choke Sydney, but that Sydney accidentally died as a result. In a fourth confession, he recanted some of his previous confessions, claiming there were no such things as sexual fantasy or threesomes, but maintained that he accidentally still choked Sydney to death. How do you accidentally choke someone? You don't. If you choke them until they die, you're just a murderer. At some point, Aubrey told the FBI that his job was to make movies for special kinds of kinks. He was paid by people who wanted to see these movies, and he used their money to pay subjects such as Sydney, knowing full well that a choking kink can lead to death. This piece of shit is not fooling no one. However, some of Aubrey's confessions seemed credible to authorities, such as when he tipped them about the location where he threw Sydney's smartphone, leading the police to Wilbur's Czech Cemetery, where indeed they found her phone, driver's license, and credit card. Sydney's family sat in the front of the row of the courtroom, with Bailey's family across the room, as Judge Vicki Johnson rehashed the details of the case, which started in 2017. Now, this is going to kind of lay everything out. what really happened than what we knew that happened. Aubrey confessed to murder of Sydney Loof by strangulation with an electrical cord. The cord was found near Sydney's remains. Defense attorneys attempted to present Sydney's death as an accident during fetish-like sexual activity. You know, I don't understand these defense attorneys and how they can defend these monsters. When you know they did this to another human being, I'd be on purpose giving shit over to the other side, trying to help them out. Man, I would act like I'm helping them, my client, but I wouldn't be. Several witnesses from stores came forward, however, with videos from their surveillance cameras. You will see pictures and video surveillance that this motherfucker, before the second date, actually went into Menards, where Sydney was actually on the clock working, and you can see where she passes him. Like, she didn't know who he was. She only knew of Bailey. She had no idea Aubrey existed. Not at this point. And he was buying stuff to use on Sydney. And then there is another surveillance video from Home Depot at like 10 in the morning. Sydney didn't go over there till later in the afternoon. And they were buying a hacksaw, y'all, and gloves, and all this other stuff. That's premeditation. They got your asses, both of y'all, at the store buying this shit before Sydney even came over, while Sydney was alive. Premeditation. Aubrey and Bailey were seen at a hotel near Sydney's job and purchasing odd supplies from stores, combined with cell phone records that evidence supported premeditated murder. Prosecutors also presented evidence of the improper disposal of human remains, adding to the charges against Bailey and Aubrey. While Aubrey confessed to the murder, he insisted that Bailey did not participate in the killing. The jury came to an unanimous decision within 2 hours. Their conviction included first-degree murder, improper disposal of human skeletal remains, and conspiracy to commit murder. Aubrey was given the death sentence and became the 12th death row inmate in Nebraska. Bailey's conviction included the same charges. However, she received a life sentence in prison instead of capital punishment. Now, who decided? There was a 3 judges that was ruling over this case. Not sure why, I've never heard of a panel of judges. One of the 3 judges ruling over the case stated that Bailey's actions did not meet the requirement of exceptional depravity needed for the death penalty. This 2-1 decision made it impossible to impose the death sentence, as this decision must be unanimous. The panel of the 3 judges presided over the trial on June 11, 2018. Bailey and Aubrey were charged with murder in the first degree and improper disposal of human remains. A day later, the duo made their first court appearance. In July and August, prosecutors expressed their plans to seek capital punishment for Bailey and Aubrey, both of whom pled not guilty. What the fuck? Okay, the prosecution added conspiracy to commit murder to the list of charges pressed against the two. In June, Aubrey pled. In June 2019, y'all, this shit, like, drug along for a long-ass time. Aubrey pled guilty to just one of the charges, namely the improper disposal of Sydney's remains. At the end of June, a frustrated Aubrey, y'all, I have this video and it is fucking insane. Aubrey lashed out in court, proclaiming Bailey's innocence, just bursted this out in court and cursing everyone before stabbing his neck with what appeared to be a razor blade. He literally slashed his neck back and forth 3 times, but y'all, the next day he was back in court. The judges and shit were like, no, mm-mm, and we don't care. We don't care that you try to slit your throat and you're a coward and you're trying to not have to deal with this or deal with being in prison. And, yeah, he tried to take his own life. I just, idiot. Idiot, idiot, idiot. Okay, this is the evidence that was presented in court. The trial proceeded after Aubrey's injury, and the prosecution presented evidence against Bailey and Aubrey. Clerks from Falls City Grand Weaver Hotel stated that they witnessed Bailey and Aubrey at the hotel weeks before Sydney's disappearance. Surveillance camera records Bailey and Aubrey checking in at a Best Western hotel in Lincoln, nearby Sydney's Menards, on November 14th at 4 p.m. On November 15th at 11:30 a.m., they shopped at Erdavark Antique Mall, buying a folding saw, a weeder, and food grinders. Like, what the fuck were they gonna do with the grinders? Are they trying to make themselves hamburgers or something? That made me feel nauseous when I read that. Shortly after, cell tower data for both suspects' phones showed that they were waiting near Sydney's residence before departure to work. Like, they literally were, like, around the corner waiting in their car. She went to work. And then they appeared to have followed Sydney to Menards. There, that day, CCTV recordings, Aubrey is seen entering at noon right before Sydney exits the store, with Aubrey looking over his shoulder at her. At Menards, Aubrey purchased an air freshener, cotton cord, Drano, protein bars, and a thermometer and lighters. While Sydney was at work, Home Depot surveillance tapes show the duo buying a foot-long hacksaw, wire snips, drop cloths, and a sharp utility knife with backup blades. Other surveillance recordings display Bailey and Aubrey purchasing a tree saw, 30-gallon trash bags, and a couple gallons of Clorox bleach before and after the murder. Clorox and hefty plastic bags were bought from the Dollar General store a few hours before Sydney's second date and from a grocery store in Wilbur the day after. Premeditated. Staff at both stores testify at the trial. A manager at the Dollar General store confirmed the barcodes for the bleach and plastic bag found near Sydney's remains matched the ones in Bailey and Aubrey's receipts. The manager also presented a receipt dated November 16, 2017, showing Bailey buying a couple of bottles of Drano at the grocery store. Bailey purchased additional bleach, plastic trash bags, and a trash bin. After these purchases, data from cell phone towers showed that pairs phones traveling to and from the area where Sydney's body remains were found. I mean, they are the most stupid motherfuckers ever. Despite extensive searches, authorities could not locate the cutting tools, especially the hacksaw. However, they had many items they could analyze, such as handcuffs, ropes, dog collar and leash, and sex toys. Sydney's DNA could not be found anywhere on these items. Pieces of electric wire were found scattered near Sydney's remains, which Aubrey admitted he used to strangle her. However, the FBI found Sydney's blood on some apparel, namely a rubber glove and pair of pants. Authorities could not identify who wore the gloves or pants. However, there was limited support for Aubrey's DNA on the surface of the electric wire. Overall, though, the quality of the latent prints were poor, disabling police from definitely attributing them to any person. In July of 2019, three women took the stand to allege that Bailey and Aubrey had desire to record victims as they were tortured and killed them before profiting millions from the sales of these videos. Those are called snuff films. In one of his confessions, Aubrey's claimed that he records Sydney consenting to be choked out, although that tape has never been found, because she didn't. And Aubrey never claimed to have recorded her death. Aubrey went on to recant the claim that he recorded Sydney giving consent to being strangled. Yeah, because he's a piece of shit fucking liar. Sorry, I'm just in the mood to curse a lot today. Later that month, the FBI revealed that while the pair were housed at the Saline County Jail, Aubrey transmitted letters, some ciphers, to Bailey informing her of what story to tell the court. The codes were to cipher, showing Aubrey taking full responsibility for the murder and painting Bailey as a forced participant in the crime. Also written in the letters were Aubrey's plan to make money by making snuff sex films, alleging that he lied about the original intention for no one to get hurt in the process. Mitigating circumstances. Defense attorneys for Bailey and Aubrey were public defenders. After Aubrey confessed to strangling Sydney, the defense request rested its case on presenting the couple's actions as kinks gone wrong. The defense painted Aubrey as a person with an impoverished and troubled childhood, someone who's assisting the police in bringing justice to Sydney's family. Aubrey's attorney also tried poking holes in the prosecution's case, painting Sydney as a depressed person who used cocaine and citing memes depicting choking and rough sex stored in her iCloud accounts as evidence that Sydney sought out such sexual fantasies. Similarly, Bailey's attorney emphasized Bailey's traumatic childhood and insinuated her role in Sydney's murder as forced as being emotionally manipulated by Aubrey, who was double her age. He was like 50-something, y'all. He's gross. The common denominator in the pair's defense was the wish to avoid the death penalty. Aubrey sought a new trial and requested that it was rejected by Judge Vicki Johnson. Bailey fared better with her request to change venue, which was granted to prejudice. In February 2020, District Judge Julie Smith recused herself as she was instrumental in the recent implementation of Nebraska's execution protocol. In October 2020, a jury convicted Bailey of murder in the first degree, conspiracy to commit murder, and improper disposal of human remains. In June 2021, the third judge panel unanimously agreed to sentence Aubrey to death. Appealing the sentence, Aubrey sought to represent himself, as any murderer like Ted Bundy, a request that was denied. Thank God we did not have to see that train wreck. In an unrelated case, Bailey and Aubrey were sentenced for defrauding hundreds of thousands of dollars from interstate coin buyers. Aubrey already had a criminal background involving forged checks. Bailey is now an inmate at the Nebraska Correctional Center for Women in York. Aubrey is now on death row at the Texumseh State Correctional Institution in Texumseh. Sorry, I said that wrong. And during his sentences, Aubrey read a statement admitting that he killed Sydney, but denying her death was premeditated. Aubrey claimed Sydney was brought to his apartment by Bailey because he wanted to recruit her into his cult. Aubrey said he killed Sydney because he feared she would alert authorities about the lifestyle he was living with Bailey. I had no doubt she would tell people if I let her go, said Aubrey. He's so disgusting. He added, I have done some terrible things in my life. There is no reasonable doubt that this aggravating circumstance against Aubrey Trail justifies an imposition of a sentence of death. Saline County District Judge Vicki Johnson said, Miss Sydney was needlessly mutilated by Aubrey in order to satisfy his intellectual and sexual curiosity. Sydney posed no threat to Aubrey or Bailey, she stated. She was completely harmless and her murder was completely unnecessary. Now about the sex cult, I'm going to read more about in depth in that. He told police that he and Sydney, along with two other women, but not Bailey, had engaged in some consensual BDSM, which the woman had paid him $15,000 to film. He said that during that, he had strangled her with an extension cord solely as an erotic act, but it had gotten out of hand and he accidentally killed her. Afterwards, he said he panicked and chopped up her body and hid it so as not to get caught. Bailey corroborated his story, claiming she had fallen asleep in the living room while Sydney, Aubrey, and the other two women engaged in group sex in the bedroom. Perhaps the most damning surveillance footage found them, you know, the day before or the same day earlier that day, buying shit to murder her. In addition to the digital and forensic evidence, the prosecution also had witness testimonies from three women who were ordered to remain anonymous. Their testimonies were used to prove that not only was Sydney's murder premeditated, but that Aubrey's motive was beyond bizarre. The women, all in their early 20s, testified that they had first met Bailey through Tinder, just like Sydney. Bailey had introduced them to Aubrey, whom she described as her boyfriend and sugar daddy. They described being given manicures, expensive clothes, cell phones, drugs, and weekly allowances of $150 to $200. In exchange, the woman testified they were expected to engage in group sex with Aubrey and Bailey, whom they had to refer to as Daddy and Mommy. That made me cringe so hard saying that. That's just, I don't care what type of sexual fantasies you're in, but don't murder somebody. They were also expected to help Aubrey and Bailey carry out their scams and fence stolen property. As times went on, the rules of their relationships began to get more controlling. They were forbidden to be with any other men, had to ask permission to do anything, and were locked inside the couple's homes or a motel room, and were expected to check in via text or phone every 3 hours. But that was only the beginning. The women also testified that Aubrey described himself as a vampire, and that they were now witches who belonged to his cult. They said he claimed to have supernatural powers, like being able to fly and read minds. Sounds like Aubrey needs a psyche eval. The woman said that Aubrey told them they needed to torture and kill someone in order to gain more power, and that he could film it, sell the footage for $1 million, and split the money equally among them. Aubrey even suggested who to take as victims. The women said they left the cult by November 2017, before Bailey lured Sydney in. One of them said Bailey had called her later that month after Sydney's murder and convinced her to travel with them to a casino. She said she got a weird vibe from them at that time. And once she saw that the Lincoln police were trying to contact them, that's when she left the cult for good. She said, "I'm done. I'm not getting drug into this bullshit." Though, they all said that Aubrey had spoken frequently about killing and dismembering somebody, none of the women say they actually seen Bailey or Aubrey kill anyone. The three judges that were on the panel were Judge Vicky Johnson, Darla Itis, and Peter Battalion. Aubrey just kept lying and lying and lying. He said that he killed Sydney on purpose because he thought that she was gonna go and run out and tell people about the sex cult. I think maybe Sydney knew about other criminal activities they were doing, and that's one reason why he killed her. But in my opinion, y'all, I really feel like when she got there and she saw this nasty, big, fat 50-year-old guy, and she doesn't like the D, that, and then they were like all talking about cults and sex and having sex with both of them, and Sydney freaked the fuck out. She was like, "Get me the fuck out of here," and they weren't letting her leave. And that's when he strangled her to shut her up. The other females got away from the cult, but these women also said that Bailey liked to inflict pain on others. They would talk to them about wanting to murder someone and to make snuff films. What the fuck? The last woman that got away said that they were talking about killing someone else, that the first victim did not go as planned. They weren't planning on this victim having people that loved her. And the woman said Bailey said they messed up on the first one because they chose someone who was missed and cared about too much. And they were talking about Sydney. They stated they needed to be more selective on their next victim. I'm guessing, you know, like someone that doesn't have any family. The aftermath is that they lost this beautiful woman. This family lost their 20-year-old daughter who had so much life to live and was so bright and was so talented that these monsters, just because of their own selfishness, left shambles everywhere they went. Now, the family did make a Facebook page. It's called Now Celebrating Sydney Aloof. The Set Me Free Project, an anti-trafficking nonprofit organization, dedicated a $3,000 scholarship in Sydney's name to be granted to students pursuing careers in criminology, online safety, and social work. I want to kind of give you the background of what some of the family thought about going through all of this. Now, Sydney's family was in limbo waiting for answers and the release of Sydney's body. Dan Loof said he hopes that his niece's case brings more attention to others missing, and keep praying for the family, he said. Sydney's uncles, Dan and Mike, along with their wives, Judy and Vicky, arrived to help serve soup. They had like a fundraiser. The building was filled with green shirts, ribbons, and ties, and after dark, the town lit up with green lights. In addition to the soup, people could participate in a silent auction and buy pies or green light bulbs, with money going towards the Sydney family. Blackburn Manufacturing in Neely had donated 5,000 feet of plastic for ribbons and printed 2,000 signs with Sydney's picture and information that signs and flyers reached in Lincoln, Beatrice, and other cities as people took them along on their Thanksgiving travels. Others said they heard the flyers reach as far as Arizona. In a small town like this, everybody knows everybody, and you just want to help, she said. The news of Sydney's death hit the town of Neely hard. Just about everyone in town knows her parents, George and Susie Loof. George has been the principal of the high school for more than 15 years and also served as the football coach. Susie is a special education teacher. Everybody's a neighbor. Everybody's a friend and a family member. They definitely want to help any way they can. George Loof's brother Dan Loof said the family hadn't expected this outcome. "It's tough," Dan said. "At least we have closure." George and Susie really needed it. They wanted her back bad. George said he appreciated the public support. The entire state and beyond tried to help in our minds. A lot of good people exist in the world, he told the Neely News and Leader. Sydney just happened to run into someone that wasn't. The town mourns Sydney Loof, a good friend and a very sweet girl. My thoughts are that be careful online, be careful in chats, be careful even gaming. You don't
know who else is behind that keyboard.
And like I said, you love who you love. This had nothing to do with Sydney being LGBTQ+. I feel like these people did prey on her because of that. I'm guessing they just thought, well, she's into girls, so maybe she'll be into boys too. And they used a pretty 20-year-old girl to lure her in. And unfortunately, her life got stolen from her. I want to apologize to the family that you lost someone so special to you. I give my condolences. I want to get Sydney's story out there, but everyone has already done Sydney's story, and I feel like there's not much I can add on to it. Try my best to dig and dig and try to find out who Sydney was, give more to her story, and show more than what others know, but it was so hard, and I just didn't succeed. Please, please stay safe. Sydney did everything correct. The first date, she met in a public place. She made sure it was just her and Bailey. She told people where she was going, who she was with. She did all the steps, y'all. Keep your heart guarded. Make sure you really know someone before you go into their basement. I know that sounds so bad, but sometimes your heart can make your judgment naive. Sydney did nothing wrong. It was not her fault at all. Please stay safe. My next case is going to be about something I don't think I've heard anyone cover before. I am going to try to find as much information as I can and give as much information as I can about the victims, but I know a lot of the information will probably be about this murderer that killed 6 people that day. I love y'all so much. I really mean it. I appreciate y'all so much. Until next time, please like and subscribe and keep your loved ones very, very close to you. And remember, keep yourself safe. Let someone know where you're going, who the person is you're going with, and what time you should be home. Stay safe.